What's behind the latest setback in the Iran nuclear talks? European leaders say they doubt Tehran's intentions to revive the 2015 agreement, a charge Iran denies. So is a deal still possible? This is Inside Story. Hello, welcome to the programme. I'm Hashem Ahlbarra. France, the UK and Germany have raised questions about Iran's intentions to restore the 2015 nuclear agreement. This comes days after Tehran sent its response to the EU's latest proposed text for reviving the deal. The three Western nations say Iran's demands are preventing talks from resuming in Vienna. Earlier this week, the UN's nuclear watchdog published a report saying it could not verify whether Tehran's nuclear program is exclusively for peaceful purposes. The International Atomic Energy Agency said Tehran's stockpiles of up to 60% enriched uranium has grown by more than 12 kilograms. Tehran denies having nuclear ambitions. The statement by France, Germany and the UK says this latest demand raises serious doubts as to Iran's intentions and commitment to a successful outcome on the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action. It goes on to say Iran's position contradicts its legally binding obligations and jeopardizes prospects of restoring the JCPOA. Earlier this week, the U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke about Iran's response. Here's some of what he had to say.
In past weeks, we had closed some gaps. Iran had moved away from some extraneous demands, demands unrelated to the JCPOA itself. However, the latest response takes us backwards. We are not about to agree to a deal that doesn't meet our bottom line requirements and or that tries to continuously introduce extraneous demands that are not relevant to the JCPOA itself. If we conclude a deal, it's only because it will advance our national security. The president is focused on that.
We'll go to our guests in a moment. First, let's rewind to how this all began. In 2015, Iran and six world powers agreed to the historic deal. It was designed to limit Tehran's nuclear ambitions in exchange for sanctions relief. But in 2018, former President Donald Trump pulled the U.S. out, calling it the worst deal ever negotiated and reimposed sanctions. Tehran responded by scaling back its commitments and enriching uranium levels beyond the agreed capacity. Last year, talks began in Vienna to revive the deal after Joe Biden came to office. Biden says Iran must curb some of its nuclear activities before Washington is prepared to rejoin. Let's bring in our guests in Washington, D.C., Hilary Manlevret, former U.S. diplomat, former U.S.-Iran negotiator. In Tehran, we have Mohammad Barandi, media advisor for the Iranian negotiating team in Vienna and professor at the University of Tehran. Welcome to the program. Hilary, just a few weeks ago, there's this growing sentiment and optimism that a deal was almost there. Now that optimism seems to be fading away. Why is it?
I think two things changed here in Washington. One was a determination, an evaluation by Biden's political advisors that the Democrats had a better chance of keeping at least the Senate in the upcoming November 8th elections here. There had been a tremendous pessimism that the Democrats would keep the Senate or the House up until maybe the beginning of August, when President Biden's poll numbers started to rise significantly. And that has to do with a few things here in our domestic politics. But the idea, the prospect that the Democrats could retain at least the Senate has made the administration, which has always been hesitant about rejoining the JCPOA, it has made it even more hesitant to do so and hesitant to open up what they see as a wide prospect of criticism from potentially 2024 candidate Trump and other Republicans. Mm-hmm. So it's very much something that's driven by domestic politics here and domestic politics in Israel, which the Biden administration takes very, very seriously in terms of how that affects domestic politics in the United States.
Mohammed, when the draft text was circulated among the key nations, first reports or indications we got from Western powers that for the first time, Iran is not really making any strong objections as to the very essence of that document. Now the UN's watchdog is saying something quite different. They're saying that we cannot give any guarantees whatsoever that Iran's nuclear program is exclusively for peaceful purposes. What has changed?
Well, these are two separate things. The draft document was the result of months of negotiations. And in fact, if the United States and the Europeans had been sincere from the beginning, and if they had refrained from dragging their feet this whole time, we would have had something like this draft document 8-9 months ago. So they've been delaying it all along because they never really wanted an airtight deal where the Iranians would be able to implement the JCPOA in full. What they wanted was a deal with ambiguities, a text with ambiguities and loopholes, so that the United States, whenever it wants, it could use those loopholes to undermine the deal or to put pressure on Iran. So, but this draft document that was circulated a few weeks ago, when the Iranians responded to it and they gave their corrections or those things that what they stated, the issues that they thought needed to change, the EU foreign policy chief said that the Iranian response was reasonable. So if the United States had accepted what was on the table then, we would have had a deal now. Instead, the Americans gave a response which was obvious to the Iranians to be a tactic or a text delay an agreement. And mm-hmm. I agree with your guests in Washington. I think that this tactic, this delay, is due to the internal issues that Team Biden faces. So the issue is not really Iran. If what Iran had put forward, or if Iran's responses, which the European Union foreign policy chief saw mm-hmm. as reasonable, if they were accepted, then by now we wouldn't have this discussion.
Okay, Hillary, let's try to unpack the whole scenarios which are going to play out in the near future. 2015, the agreement was based on three key components. First, putting some limitations and limits on the Iranian nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief. And then the IAEA is going to be monitoring the implementation of that particular agreement. Now, the IAEA is saying, in particular, that the stockpile of highly enriched uranium has grown enough to produce enough fuel for an atomic bomb. Are we many, many steps back now to talking about getting closer to talk about a possible agreement?
Well, I think there is an agreement on the table. And if there is political will, especially in Washington, but in all capitals that have an interest in the JCPOA, then I think it could be concluded tomorrow. There is an agreement on the table. The idea that there needs to be any further real negotiation, I don't think is that serious. There is an agreement on the table, and if there was political will, especially in Washington, it would be done. I think the issue of Iran's nuclear program is a very important one to unpack, because this has been going on for decades, literally for decades. And the United States continues to say, my colleagues here in Washington continue to say, that Iran is months away from nuclear weapons, weeks away from nuclear weapons, days away from nuclear weapons, and it never happens. And so there's this sense that the urgency that is being put forward is not a real one. And that what that does, in a way, in some ways, it was convenient. It has been convenient to have an emergency in terms of a possible Iranian breakout. But mm-hmm. without that urgency, you have the politics constantly seeping into the process. And so in reality, both here in Washington and I think in Israel, and there are Israeli officials speaking about this publicly today, there's a sense that Iran's not going to get nuclear weapons anytime soon. So what's the urgency? Mm-hmm. Why mess up the political situation both here in the United States and even more importantly in Israel, which is having an election November 1st? First, which has tremendous political implications for domestic politics here in the United States.
Mohammed, when you look at the statement by the International Atomic Energy Agency, they're basically saying two things. Iran has not been really forthcoming when it comes to two things: the stockpile of highly enriched uranium and the number of advanced centrifuges that Tehran has installed and which fed uranium at the main nuclear facilities, as if they're saying that we cannot, at this particular stage, trust Tehran is not really willing to move forward when it comes to putting together something which is just solely for civilian purposes.
Well, the International Atomic Energy Agency Board of Governors is a political body. It is not a technical body. The representatives are designated by governments. And Western governments have very much influence over the board of directors in general. They have a disproportionate amount of influence there. So that's one issue. The second issue is that the head of this organization is someone who's always close to the United States. The previous head, according to WikiLeaks documents, when he wanted to get elected, he basically told the United States that I'll be with you on all the key issues if you support me. And the same is true with the current chief of the body. In fact, before the previous board of governors, he went to Palestine and met Israeli regime leaders, despite the fact that the Israeli regime has arguably, or according to some estimates, up to 200 and maybe more nuclear weapons. So he goes to Israel right before going back to the IAEA to criticize Iran. So it is a heavily politicized body. The Iranians have said from the beginning that, first of all these issues that are now, those accusations that are being made by the International Atomic Energy Agency, these they're based on claims made by the Israeli regime. Second of all, mm-hmm. The Iranians have been saying that if the IAEA, their technical experts, sit down with the Iranians, they can have this resolved, but it must not be politicized. And all of these claims are made about issues that go back over two decades ago, mm-hmm. when the Iranian peaceful nuclear program was in its infancy. The program today is far more advanced. Back then, it was clear that there was no nuclear weapon in Iran. Iran had basically just purchased a couple of old models of Pakistani centrifuges to use them to develop their own. But in any case, the most important issue for the Iranians is that, A, these accusations have to be dealt with. The file has mm-hmm. to be closed. The Iranians are willing to cooperate. But if it remains open, the Iranians are saying that the Americans will use it after a deal is signed to put pressure on Iran whenever they want. And so there are two issues. One is the claims made at the agency mm-hmm. that the Iranians are saying has to be closed. And the second is, as I said earlier, the text. Okay. The Americans want to ambiguities and loopholes in the text, and the Iranians are saying it must be airtight.
Hillary,
if I may,
go ahead.
My colleague in Tehran has a lot of very important points, but the critical issue here, and it's really almost a contradiction, but it's so important to understand, is that just as my colleague rightly says that the IAEA Board of Governors is a highly politicized body, almost precisely because of that, there is really no sense here in Washington that there's any urgency to stopping Iran's nuclear program. They've basically said this now for 20 years. There's no urgency to it. Without the urgency, it will take something else happening, some other crisis, for people here in Washington to really move towards restoring the JCPOA on terms that I think Iran and others could accept. It's that lack of urgency, and it will get potentially worse if the Republicans take control of the Congress in November and take the White House in 2024. Because throughout the Trump administration, and many of those people may run for president in 2024 on the Republican side, they don't believe that Iran is going to reach nuclear breakout anytime soon. And so they're very focused on weakening and containing Iran. And that's a very difficult place to be in the middle of a negotiation.
Mohammed, is Tehran still insisting on a specific document that says that talks about the need for reassurances from the Americans that they will be lifting the sanctions and that those the lifting of those sanctions will still be valid even if Joe Biden loses the elections and someone else takes over?
Well, I don't want to go into the details, but the Iranians have achieved a lot at the negotiating table over the past eight, nine months. And that is one reason why, as your guest in Washington pointed out, Team Biden is concerned, because they're afraid that if they sign on to this document before the election, that they'll come under criticism from Trump, and also their allies in the Israeli regime would also feel pressure. So on the one hand, despite the fact that this is a much better document than what the Americans and the Europeans wanted to have signed nine months ago, but while we're not very far away from a final agreement, we're very close. The problem is that the Americans don't want to have this discussed, from my understanding, in Congress right now. Now, there are, though, pressures that the Europeans are feeling because of the war in Ukraine, the global economic crisis, and, of course, the tensions that exist across the world, whether over Taiwan or in Europe, and U.S. internal problems, the rising concerns in Europe because of the economic crisis. All of these pressures work in favor of the signing of a nuclear deal. And also the fact that Iran has been expanding its peaceful nuclear program extensively is an incentive for the Americans to sign on to the deal. Mm-hmm. But then again, as your guest in Washington rightly points out, there's a paradox here. If the United States truly felt that the Iranian nuclear program was there to build a nuclear weapon, they would have signed the deal by now. Over the last eight, nine months, we saw numerous deadlines where the Europeans and the Americans were saying, after a particular date, we can't continue. After that date, the JCPOA doesn't make any sense anymore. But then after we pass those deadlines, they continue to negotiate. Why? Because they know quite well that Iran is not pursuing a nuclear weapon. If Iran wanted a nuclear weapon, Iran would have had a nuclear weapon a long time ago. So there is incentive for a deal, but apparently since they know that the Iranians are not pursuing a nuclear weapon, that particular incentive is much weaker than the issue of energy.
And obviously all the parties are looking forward to see exactly what happens next, what would be the ramifications of a deal or a no deal. Hillary, when you go back to 2015, I think the key element of the deal, particularly from a Western perspective, from an American perspective, was putting limits on the stockpile and also on the number of centrifuges that would be sufficient enough to give the Americans what was called back then the breakout time of 1 year, that would give the Americans more leverage to see what happens next. Now, when we see the IAEA saying, basically, we're concerned about the stockpile and we're concerned about the number of centrifuges, is it because they would like to rethink the whole notion of the breakout time this time?
Breakout time is really, it's a concept that was created. It was a concept created to enable negotiations for the United States to have a more normal relationship with the Islamic Republic of Iran, which is critically important for any major power around the world, because Iran, whether you like it or not, you like its government or not, it is an incredibly important country, critically located at the crossroads between Europe and Asia, with tremendous natural resources. There's just no getting around that. The breakout concept is not one that is based in science, let alone nuclear physics. It is a created concept. And that's why That's why the United States was able to negotiate around it, because you can make concessions, you can compromise, because it's not a concept based in science. The problem for the United States and the Western countries at this point is that there's not the urgency of the nuclear program that they were able to focus on in 2015. And my concern is that there will be other issues related to energy security, related to shipping, the protection and safety of shipping. There will be other issues. As Qatar, for example, hosts the World Cup in a couple of months, there are going to be real issues in terms of safety and security in the Persian Gulf. And that will push the United States, that will push the Europeans to come to some sort of accommodation with Tehran. But I'm not so sure it's going to be around the concept of breakout, because that was one that was just created several years ago.
Mohammed, do you think that this is just because the West, in particular, the P5 plus one, are looking forward to see more concessions from Iran? Because ultimately, as you've been both of you saying, there must be a deal in the near future, or otherwise just going to be further chaos in this part of the world?
Well, over the past few months, we saw that the United States and the Europeans were forced to give significant concessions to Iran. And the framework within which a possible deal or a hypothetical deal is signed is much more sound than it was in 2015. It's a much stronger framework. But I think it's quite clear that China wants a deal, Russia wants a deal, the Europeans want a deal. They're under enormous American pressure. They won't break from the United States. That's why their statements are in line with what Washington wants. The Europeans are desperate to ease pressure, the energy prices, to bring them down, to ease economic pressure at home. The Americans, of course, have a different problem, as your guest in Washington rightly pointed out. So we'll have to see how things play out. But we're approaching autumn and winter, and it's going to get colder. And the situation in Europe is not going to be good. So the more the Americans drag their feet, the more the Europeans drag their feet, the more it's going to be, the tougher it becomes for them in this framework. So while Iran wants a deal, the Europeans now need a deal.
Okay. Hillary, this has been going on, as you said before, for quite some time. Do you think, as a former diplomat, former US-Iran negotiator, that the key issue could be not necessarily reviving or resurrecting a deal, but the need for redefining what the Americans would like to do in the future with the Iranians and what kind of Iran they would like to see in the future in this part of the world?
It is critically important for the United States to come to terms with and accept the Islamic Republic of Iran as it is. It is an important power. It's important for the Middle East. It's important at the crossroads between Europe and Asia. It's important so far beyond the nuclear issue on so many issues, whether it's energy security, regional security, so many things. Mm-hmm. But the domestic politics in the United States are so constrained that I do not see that happening anytime soon. And so it will be very important to have these smaller agreements where at least the United States and Iran could potentially come to terms or reach an accommodation on particular issues that allow each country to go forward.
Okay.
The world, though, is changing dramatically, and how the United States and Iran approach this will be critically important for the international world order.
Well, fortunately, we'll have to leave it there, but I really appreciate your insight, Hillary Mann-Leverett and Mohammed Marandi. I really appreciate your insight. And thank you too for watching. You can see the program again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AGA Inside Story. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AGA Inside Story. From me, Hashim Akbar, and the entire team here in Doha. Bye for now.